Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Back when they made that movie Troy, no doubt they had the epic story that we're going to be talking about this morning in mind. Even if you didn't grow up in church, even if you've never been to church before in your life, I'm 100% sure you know this story, or at least have heard this story. You cannot watch a single season of any sport and not have heard a reference to, as we know, of course, what are we talking about? David and Goliath, yeah. And you know, in the movie there, they have their David and Goliath portrayal as believable as it could be for an audience, but the real thing was so much more drastic than even that. In the real account of David and Goliath, it wouldn't have been Achilles who went out to face Boagrius. It would have been the little boy talking to Achilles that went out to face Goliath. Because that's about how old David was back then. When you pick up the story and you read about it, his older brothers are off to war, but he's still at home. Why is he still at home? Most likely because he's not old enough yet to be out there in the army at war. And so it's this amazing story of this. I mean, pretty much just go over to our, come to our youth group tonight, see any of the middle schoolers, and picture them taking on Boagrius. And that's what you have in this story. Last week we talked about how David, before you get to start thinking David's some sort of superhero, before you start thinking David is this other than Superman kind of person, if he can go off and pull off something like that, I could never be like that. That's what probably you're thinking right now when you think about David and Goliath. But you have to start last week remembering when Samuel comes and talks to David and says, Samuel, one of your sons is going to become king. Can you bring them before me so I can evaluate it, hear from God, and let you know which one and anoint this one as king? He brings all seven of his sons, and Samuel's like, something's not right here. These all the kids you got? And he's like, well, there's just David. You know, he's a little runt of the litter. He's out there in the fields with the sheep. He's just a shepherd. I mean, he couldn't possibly be the one you're looking for. And he's like, get him here now. We're not sitting now. We're not eating until he gets here. And sure enough, David shows up, and he says, this is the one. And our memory verse from last week was, God doesn't look on the things man looks on. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. By the way, that is the key verse for last week and for this week and pretty much every week throughout this whole series, because that is the issue here, is that David is just like you and he's just like me, okay? And all you have to do to be a man after God's own heart or a woman after God's own heart is what? Pursue God's heart. It's not like this, something we looked last week. It's not like some crown that you get or some achievement you get. It's just if you want God's heart, chase after God's heart, and you are a person after God's own heart. So that's where we pick up, is that David is just like you and me. He's just a shepherd boy. After he gets anointed as king, things start to happen and things start looking up. What ends up happening is he's really good on the guitar, and Saul's got some headaches and he wants to hear some sort of Kenny G or, you know, Easy. I don't know what's, is there a good like guitar player that's kind of relaxing? I can't even think of one. I don't know. I think of like those, whatever that instrumental music is that they play when you're watching like fish aquariums and stuff like that at the aquarium. You know what I'm talking about? Like that, you know, little finger picking guitar. That's David. He's playing that, soothes the king's headache. And you can kind of see this working, like, okay, things are happening. He goes from a shepherd on the countryside. He's now in the king's court. But you pick up in this story, and the scene shifts over to the battlefield with the Philistines in Joshua, which book are we in? 1 Samuel 17. All those books are coming up here in a second. So 1 Samuel 17, they're facing off against the Philistines. A little backstory on who the Philistines were. When we'll pick up with Moses on our historical journey through the Old Testament. So Moses brings the people out of Egypt. They wander in the wilderness for a little while. Then they move into the Promised Land. They move into the Promised Land. Joshua leads the people to take out all the major fortified cities. And they do. And then he divvies up the land into the 12 tribes. And he says, all right, you guys go finish clearing out the land. All the heavy lifting is done. You in smaller groups can go and finish clearing out the land, carrying out God's judgment on people who've been sinfully destructive for the past 400 years in this land, to clear them out, and you can have this utopian society that is a city on a hill that can bring all people to God. That's the plan. Go for it. Well, they don't. They get lazy. They think, you know, why go out there and do that? Why go out there and take that city when we've already got this city right here conquered? I mean, look how beautiful this place is. We can just hang out here. We don't need to go out there. So they get lazy. They get complacent. And over time, these other peoples grow up stronger and they start sort of mingling, and they say, you know, they're really not that bad. I don't know why we even have to go to war with them anyway. We can sort of tolerate these sinful issues and stuff going on. It's not that big of a deal, and they just come in. Over time, this group from Crete, with a Greek heritage, comes into the coastal area, and they're called the Philistines. And they kind of land right around near modern-day Tel Aviv on the coast. Most of the Israelites are in the mountains. That's where Bethlehem and along the, you know, just over by the Jordan River in the mountain area. And in between is a series of valleys, okay? It's kind of like a fertile plain. So this area between the coast and the mountains becomes very strategically important for two reasons. One, the resources that are there in the valleys. But also, it sort of gives you that buffer, militarily speaking, or for safety reasons, between this other group. And so both groups would attempt to sort of take control of this area. And so when you pick up in 1 Samuel 17, the Philistines have marched out into this area to sort of take over this land as a sort of a preemptive way to then later on assault into the mountains of where most of Israel is. And when you get to this point, the Valley of Elah, what's happened is that the Philistines have come up on one side of this ridge, and the Israelite army has come out to meet them on the other side of a ridge, and there's a valley between. Now, to cross that valley would mean to make a suicidal attempt to go uphill. If you know anything at all about military strategy, you never want to fight in uphill battle. Yes, exactly. So neither one of them wants to give up their high position to leave themselves exposed out in the valley. And so they're both sitting there kind of staring at each other until one or the other of them turns around and goes home or does the stupid thing and makes the first move. And so they're just sitting there camped out. Well, while they're camped out, this man named Goliath comes out to challenge them. And so he comes out into the valley, basically says, if any are man enough, come down here and fight me. And that's where you pick up in 1 Samuel chapter 17. It says that he's a giant. Depending on the way that you translate the Hebrew, he's either 7 feet or 9 feet, just depending on the way the translation is. The translation literally appears to be that he's over 9 feet tall. Some scholars have said, well, there's no way he could possibly be that tall, so therefore it has to be not 9 foot six, but 6 foot nine. So it really depends on the way that you read that. I don't know. We've had people in our time that have been well over 8 feet, so it's not unheard of that he could have a tumor in his pituitary gland, which causes what they call, I don't know, basically it's same thing Andre the Giant had, which makes you, what is it? Gigantism. Yeah, there's another technical term for it. I can't remember. What? Yeah, I can't remember. It's Andre the Giant syndrome. I don't know. George Murison. Just think that, okay? So big dude, right? So he comes out, and he says this. He says, why do you guys even come out here for battle? We're in verse 8 of 1 Samuel chapter 17. Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we'll become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become subjects and serve us. Then the Philistine said this, this day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other. So basically, if you're man enough, come down here and fight. So what he's suggesting is the same thing you saw there in the movie Troy. Troy, of course, is Greek armies. And this was a popular tactic in the Greco world for solving conflicts. After all, why go through the carnage and bloodshed of mass armies fighting when just two could sort of duke it out? Because they had this something we in America with our secular society have kind of lost. Some people in the world still hold these views. They believe that wars were fought primarily amongst their gods. So like I have my deity, you have your deity, and this battle will determine who's got the stronger deity, and the stronger deity is the one who's going to ultimately win anyway. So you could have your best face off against my best, and after all, your god's going to be fighting against my god in this whole contest. And so instead of losing thousands of men, we could obviously just see who's got the stronger god and the stronger force behind us with just this representative warfare, which is kind of what you saw in there. I cut that up quite a bit, but you saw just that little piece of it. And so it's called single combat. And so Goliath is obviously the champion that comes out on that side. So that's going on here. And then the scene shifts in 1 Samuel chapter 17 from the battlefront back to the homeland, back to Bethlehem. And it says, meanwhile, David's still back at home. Jesse's three eldest sons had followed Saul off to war. But David went back and forth from Saul to tend to his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So when David is not playing guitar for the king, he's back at home watching sheep. Once again, here he is. He is the future anointed king of Israel. And what is he doing? He's sitting out on a hill watching sheep. And forget whatever romantic view you have of a shepherd, this is not a great job, okay? This is not anything anybody ever aspires to. This is something you're stuck with, okay? He's the youngest. He's stuck with this job. And so he's out there wandering the hillside alone with sheep, with nothing to do but write poetry, practice his guitar and throw rocks at trees with his little sling. Not a big deal. That's all he's got to do. So meanwhile, he's back at home, and it says 40 days the Philistine came forward every morning and every evening and took his stand. Little side note about 40. Whenever you see 40 in the Bible, it's I run off on these little tangents just because I want you to like learn something about the Bible while we're teaching this other thing about the Bible. So 40 is representative typically in the Bible of a struggle or a trial period. For instance, it rained when Noah was on the ark for 40 days and 40 nights. Moses, after he killed the Egyptian and fled to the wilderness, he was out there for 40 years. He then goes in and gets people out of Egypt, and they wander in the wilderness for 40 years. When Jonah goes to warn Nineveh that judgment's going to be coming unless you change, he says 40 days or Nineveh will be overturned. When Jesus went out to fast for that period of trial where the devil came and tempted him, he was out and he fasted for 40 days. So this 40, so Goliath coming out for 40 days taunting them, is this, it's setting this up as this is a trial period. This is a test. What is going to happen? By the way, a little side note, and this is sort of thing where Jesus comes into this whole picture. Remember when Jesus, after his resurrection, explained to those two disciples on the Emmaus Road how everything in Scripture all is about him? Here's the cool thing. 40 represents a period of trial and testing. Jesus, after the resurrection, appeared after the resurrection for, anybody guess? For 40 days. And that was not a period of trial. That was where Jesus had overcome the trial. And he overcome that trial you saw for 40 days, and then he ascends, and then 10 days later is the day of Pentecost. And so it's kind of a neat thing where Jesus triumphs over this period of trial and testing. So little side note, so Goliath's out there for 40 days. That's what that sort of signifies in Scripture. But back to our story. Now, Jesse said to David, take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread to your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit to see how their brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. So probably at this time, Jesse's too old to go out and check on the boys himself. So he says, here's some granola bars, some loaves of bread, some cheese. Take this off to your brothers and see how they're doing. Report back to me how everything's going on. So here you got David. He is a shepherd and he is an errand boy. Anybody can identify yet with David? All right, before you think he's Superman, he is a shepherd and he is an errand boy. That's what he is, okay? So early in the morning, David left the flock to the care of a shepherd. Got to make sure we take care of those sheep. I love how that kind of puts that little note in there. It's like, you know, I got to make sure somebody's watching my sheep, left those in the care. He goes off, he loaded up, he set it out as Jesse had directed. When he reached the camp, as the army was going out to its battle positions to do nothing but stand there, but shout the war cry. It's like, you know, we got spirit. Yes, we do. We got spirit. How about you? I mean, I don't know what they're doing. They're just, you know, shouting at each other war cries. All right, so, but they're not doing anything. So Israel and the Philistines were drawing up. There ain't no flies on us. All right, so Israel and, okay, something I said, I'm sorry, okay. If, I didn't mean to offend you. All right, moving on. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of the supplies and ran to the battle lines to ask his brothers how they were. As he was there talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines. And as he steps out front and shouts out in defiance, kind of like you saw in the movie, you know, like Boagri's coming out. And David heard it. And whenever the Israelites saw this man, they fled from him in great fear. Now, the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He keeps defying Israel. But the king's going to give great wealth to anybody who kills him. He'll also give his daughter in marriage. And he'll be exempt from taxes in Israel. Which, remember the movie Armageddon? They have that list of demands. If they're going to go on the asteroid and blow it up, it's like, you know, I want you to bring back 8 tracks. Tell me who killed Kennedy. Oh, and no taxes ever. That was like the final kicker right there. So I get this. So David asked the men standing there, said, wait. What's going to be done for the man killing the Philistine? He gets all that stuff, and he's removing the disgrace from Israel. Who is this guy to come out here and defy the armies of the living God? And so they repeated what to him what had been saying, and they told him, this is what will be done for the guy who kills him. When Eliab, David's older brother. Now remember, Eliab is the one that when Samuel first saw Eliab, he's like, surely this is the guy. He looks the part, he fits. This is obviously going to be the guy. I mean, because he is leading man material if there ever was one. So when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking to some of the men, he burned with anger and he asked him, why have you come down here and who'd you leave those few sheep with anyway? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You just came down here to watch the battle. You know, I think it's good that he's concerned about the sheep. I think it's good that he's wanting to make sure that the family business is cared for, that his brother's not negligent in the moment. Anybody with me on this? Or do you think he is just pointing out, hey, he's not a warrior. No, he ain't one of us. No, he's not a warrior. He's a shepherd, everybody. He's a shepherd. He's just a pipsqueak. He's the run of the litter. He don't belong out here with us. Before he's all talking big, bad, and tough, just know, everybody, he's a shepherd. You know, but he does it in a very subtle way. You notice that? He doesn't come out and say he's a shepherd. He's like, hey, who'd you leave those sheep with? Isn't that just as dirty? I mean, it's so real life. You know, it's what somebody at the office would do. It's like they wouldn't call you out and say that you don't belong in the meeting. They just say, yeah, aren't you supposed to be cleaning out the trash cans right now? You know, just sort of a gentle jab, like, you know, you're not supposed to be here. You know, and then he says, you know, I know your heart. You're just conceited. You know, you just want to, all you want to do is come out here and act like you're big and talking tough. And then you go back to all your shepherd friends and say, you know, I was like, let me at him. I could take him, but they wouldn't let me take him. So, you know, whenever I get older and I get to be in the army, stuff's going to change, right? That's all you're doing. You're just trying to talk big and bad because you know you're not fighting. You're just conceited. You just came down here to watch the battle, only to watch the battle. David, classic little brother question. Now what have I done? I mean, can you just picture little brother? Now what have I done? I came out here. This guy's taunting our God. None of y'all are doing anything about it. Our God has sworn to protect us. Let me get this straight here. So our God has sworn to protect us. And if you jump out there and face this guy on behalf of God, who's already sworn he's going to fight our battles for us, if you do that, you get money, you get fame, you get fortune, and the princess? Why isn't anybody jumping on this? And so he says, can I even speak? Such a little brother. What have I done? Can I even speak? Then he turned away before somebody else brought up the same matter. And the man answered as before. What David said was overheard and reported back to Saul. So Saul sent for him. Now you picture Saul. Word comes in, hey, new warrior just showed up. I don't know where he is. He's over there somewhere with the tribe of Judah group. And he says he can take them. And so he's like, you know, expecting his Achilles to come walking out. And it's not Achilles on the horse. It's a little boy. Just picture of that movie right there when, if you know, when he says, that's why nobody will remember your name. Just picture the boy going, oh, yes, they will. And he yanks Achilles off the horse, jumps on it, and rides in, okay? That would have made that movie probably a comedy, but that's how this thing went down, okay? So you can sort of see the comedic setup coming here. So Saul sends for him, right? And David said to Saul, so David kind of shows up, and you just picture Saul going, what? And David says, let nobody lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. And Saul replied, you can't go out and fight him. This guy, you're just a kid. And this guy's been a warrior since he was your age. But David said to Saul, listen, your servant's been keeping his father's sheep. This is sort of like when a teenager would say, I've been doing this all my life. Right. Tell me more about your many year of experience. So I've been keeping my father's sheep. But then he kind of turns. He's like, and when a lion or a bear came to try to carry off a sheep from my flock, I went after it and I struck it and I rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when one turned on me, oh yeah, I grabbed that sucker by its hair and I ripped it. I struck it and I killed it. Okay, so maybe I took it out of saying. So I just pictures, like, you know, when that bear came after me, just picture a bear turning on you. It's like I grabbed that bear by its coat and I threw it to the ground and I killed that sucker. How's this guy going to be any different? That's where you start going, kid's got a point, you know? I mean, he's wrestling grizzly bears and mountain lions. I mean, if nothing else, he's got moxie, right? I mean, if nothing else, he's got the guts to take this whole thing on. He says, listen, your servants killed both the lion and the bear. How is this guy going to be any different? He has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. You can just picture him saying, he's rescued me from those animals. He'll rescue me from that animal. That's pretty much where he's getting at. So Saul's like, not with any other options. He says, all right, Lord be with you. All right, so he says, all right, but if you're going to go out there and face this guy, I can't in good conscience just send you out there with your bathrobe and your stick and your sling. I can't in good conscience do that. If you're going to go fight him, you know, I'm going to give you my armor. And so he tries to suit him up in his armor. So he dresses David in his own tunic, and he puts on his coat of armor and his bronze helmet on his head, and he fastens a sword. And first of all, you might be thinking, Okay, and the stuff doesn't fit, okay? It's like David's like a 32 regular and Saul's like a 52 long, okay? If you've ever been a little kid trying on your dad's sport coat, you know, I played orangutan when I was a kid. Anybody with me on that? Y'all do that? It's always a fun thing. You put on the shoes and you're slopping around. That's David in this moment, right? So you might even ask, well, why didn't they get him some armor that fit him? Or why use the king's armor? Why not use one of the warrior's armors? Do you know why? That's the only armor they had. That's it. They had one set of armor, okay? When you read a couple chapters before this, you see that the army is down to two swords. You're like, how does an army only have two swords? Well, another little piece of background. I get fascinated by all this stuff. There's a lot of like really cool history. I'm going to share with you some cool history, and then we'll kind of get back to the story. This whole thing takes place right where the Iron Age and the Bronze Age are coming together. Okay, remember there was the Bronze Age, then you moved into the Iron Age, and if a bronze sword hit an iron sword, you know, it's like one stronger than the other. Well, the Israelites are in the Bronze Age. The Philistines, with their technology coming from Greece and over, they're in the Iron Age, which is why it'll mention in here that Goliath has a bronze helmet and he also has an iron tipped spear. That's a little key note right there. Whereas the Israelites, all their weapons are bronze, whereas the Philistines have some armor they've got some iron enhanced weapons at this point. So you can just see how it's not all iron, but it's bronze and iron mixed. So they're a little bit ahead of the technology curve. On top of that, whenever these two sides would do battle, one of the things that was really important was to find the other side's blacksmiths and either kill them or capture them. All of the blacksmiths from Israel pretty much had been killed or captured at this point, which is why they don't have the capacity to make more weapons, okay? In the same way right now, what are we doing with nuclear weapons right now? We are trying to make sure nobody else has the capacity to make a nuclear weapon. It was the same sort of concept. Well, we sort of are, but that's a difference. That's a whole different political comment. Don't even write me anything about what's going on in the world. Okay, just keep with me there. Right, so bottom line, what you have right now is, you read back, I think it's 1 Samuel 14, it says they've got two swords because they don't have any more blacksmiths. So when it says Saul gave him his armor, there's a couple things there. One, it's because that's the only armor they had. That's, I think, the only sword that the army had. Everybody else just had, you know, sticks, clubs, axes, whatever, other utensils, pitchforks kind of thing. But it's also sort of this subtle little side point. When Saul is crowned king, it is said that he is head and shoulders taller above everybody else, right? So you've got Goliath, this giant, and you've got Saul, who's head and shoulders above everybody else and has a suit of armor. And it sort of subtly says, who should be the one out there fighting this battle? It should be Saul. Who's not fighting this battle? It's Saul. And who is? God's man. God's man is running out to the battle to fight this thing. So he tries these things on. He's like, listen, I can't move in this stuff, you know. Goliath is out there, of course. He's it says that he's got on a chain of mail weighing about 100 pounds on his chest, made of bronze. He's got a heavy metal helmet. He's got three separate weapons, all optimized for close combat. He's got a thrusting javelin made entirely of bronze, which can penetrate a shield. He's got a sword on his hip. He's got another short-range spear with an iron shaft or iron tip on it. With a cord so you could pull it back in. I'm going to kind of skip over some of that since I don't have time. So basically, David looks at Saul and he says, listen, I can't go out there in these because I'm not used to them. In other words, I haven't been trained in using all this stuff. None of this fits. I didn't go fight a lion and a bear with all this junk on, all right? I got to do my way. I got to do what I know best. I got to go out there with what I have. And so David, literally, he picks up his shepherd's club and his sling and he heads out to battle. And everybody's thinking this is crazy, but he obviously thinks he knows what he's doing. So meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. So David heads out to the battle, and the Philistine's coming at him with a shield bearer. So you got, not only is Goliath fully armed, he's got this guy holding a 6-foot shield in front of him, okay? Which is sort of odd. It's like, okay, you're so tough, but you've got this like moving shield in front of you. So moving on. So he looked over, and he saw that David was just a little more than a boy. And it says, the description says, glowing in health and handsome, and he despised him. So it's basically what he's saying, like, you sent a cute little boy out here? Really? I mean, he's cute and all, but why? Why do you, you know, this is ridiculous. And so he says, what am I, a dog? Did you come at me with sticks? You know, because David's sitting there with a stick, right? He says, what are you coming at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Here it is. This is a spiritual battle is where he's coming from. He says, come here, he said, and I'll give you over to the flesh of the birds and to the wild animals. Now, here's the cool thing about David, all right? David not just has the courage to step into this moment, okay? This is what I love about David. He doesn't just have the courage to step into this moment without any armor, with just what he knows already. He actually is talking trash back, okay? Think the level you have to go, not to just step on the court or onto the field with somebody, but to talk trash back, right? It's one thing to get in the ring with Mike Tyson. It's another thing to be taunting him before the fight. You with me? I'm talking like pre-ear biting, pre-face tattoo, like the Robin Givens era Tyson, right? That's what I'm talking about here, okay? Moving on. So he says to David, David says to Philistine, "You come at me with a sword and a spear and a javelin? Well, I come at you with the name of our Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, who you have defiled. And this day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down, and I will cut off your head." And by the way, I don't got a knife. I don't have a sword. Guess where I'm getting that sword from, Goliath? I'm taking off your belt, and I'm cutting your head off with it. And he goes on, "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down, and I'll cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of this Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. For all those who gathered here will know that it's not by sword nor by spear that the Lord saves, but the battle is the Lord, and he'll give you all into my hands." I think he's confident in his relationship with Jesus. I'm just saying. You with me on this? I think he's pretty sure of who God is at this point, right? So as the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, the sling is not like this kind of a slingshot. It's a strap that you whip around like this or like this, and you release one of the straps, and if you're good at it, you can hit stuff. I've seen a lot of things on History Channel and whatnot. I've seen some articles about this. The size of the rock and the speed with which it would go would be about 350 or more feet per second, okay? So at 100 yards or so, it's hitting you in about a second, okay? It's coming right at you, very, very quick. And so it says, you know, because he's coming towards him. And so reaching his bag, he took out a stone, and he slung it, and he struck the Philistine on the forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. It's been said that the impact of a sling like that would be about the same impact of a Colt 45. And in this moment, I just always picture, you got Goliath, and you got a shield bearer. Sorry, dog. Like, what's he thinking? I mean, it's just kind of like, there was a commercial a while back for Capital One credit cards with a guardian angel who was always, like, asleep at his job. And every time, like, someone happened to his, you know, the guy who was protecting, be like, "Oh, man, my bad. I just picture that shield guy. My bad. But here's the thing. If you're throwing a spear, okay, you have time to get out of the way. You don't have that, because a spear is being chucked at about 100 feet per second, okay? So this is 3 to 4 times faster than that, a much smaller projectile. It wasn't something he was expecting, and it takes him out. So afterwards, this is David trying to throw the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword, he struck him down. David ran over, stood over him, took his Philistine sword, drew it out, cut off his head. It's kind of, I won't get into the rest of it. It's kind of funny. David, like, carries the sword and the head around for a while. He's like, look at this. It's kind of a different day and time. So there's a lot of things to take out of the story. And I've read a lot of different takes on this story. I've read some takes that pretty much break this down as a military struggle. They discount anything of God's involvement in the story at all. They just pretty much say, you know, Goliath, he just brought a knife to a gunfight, and that's all there is about it, okay? He just didn't understand what he was up against, and, you know, he didn't understand. It'd be like showing up with a knife, and somebody pulls out a Colt 45. I always picture the Indiana Jones. Remember, the guy's got those knives and stuff like that, and he's got his whip, and he's like, walks off. That's what some people play this story out. Others take this story, and they kind of go way the other extreme. The battle belongs to the Lord, and how many giants do you face in your life? And they sort of overemphasize this. Is this some sort of template to overcoming the fear in your life? My issue with the first one, of course, is if you're going to tell me that God's not a part of one of our middle schoolers going up against Boagrius, the way that he does it, and then, you know, with the confidence that he does it and triumphing in it, you're just nuts, okay? You're fooling yourself. We already said, if you were to watch Troy and that little kid jumps up on the horse and races out there, that's a comedy, that's not a drama. You with me? Okay, so just don't even tell me that that guy's not a part of this. To go to the other side and say this is all about overcoming fear and having confidence and courage in the face of fear, I just have one problem with that. Nowhere in here do I see David struggling with issues of fear. Like he shows up and he's like, what's going on? What's he doing? Okay, so he's talking bad about our God. Who's going out there? Nobody's going. What do you mean? Wait a minute. Nobody's going out there to shut this guy up who's talking bad about our God, who's sworn to protect us and defend us. And on top of that, you get the fame, the fortune, and the girl. What am I missing here? What am I missing? Like, what you're missing is the fact that the guy is huge. What was our verse from last week? The way that God looks, do not consider his outward appearance or his looks. For the Lord looks at his heart. When David shows up to the battle scene, what is he doing? Is he considering his outward appearance or his looks? No. He says, this guy's heart is opposed to our God. And everybody around him is going, but this guy's 6'9". This guy's 9'6". This guy's huge. Right? And David's like, no. If you'll notice, there's one little key in there. It says, going back up, I don't know if I can find it real quick. It says David heard the Philistines. And then it says, David heard Goliath. And then right after that it says, and the Israelites, when they saw Goliath. Did you pick up on that? Our memory verse from last chapter was, don't look like God looks. Okay, we don't look like God looks. We look at the outward appearance. God looks at the heart. David is hearing this guy's heart. They're looking at his appearance. Big difference, okay? So take that, number one, just take that. David sees something totally different. He's not looking at what he's seeing. He's seeing what God sees. He sees this guy's opposed to God, and therefore God's going to do the battle right here, okay? This is a man who understands the history of Joshua marching around Jericho and God taking the battle on. He knows this kind of thing, all right? So that's number one. Second of all, David mentions in there, he says, I fought a lion, I fought a bear. How's this going to be any different? What you have is you have a guy who's been walking with God every single day, as we mentioned last week, every single day in the monotony and the obscurity of everyday life. He is walking with God and when he fights a lion, and he's walking with God when he fights a bear. And so when he shows up on the scene, this to him is not a giant. This is just another day. This is just nothing different than everything he's already done. Have you ever been in something where you've ever competed in an event where your practice was harder than the actual event? Whether it be in soccer or in wrestling, or some of you in the military, sometimes your military training exercises are a lot harder than your deployments, or at least with the task. I'm not saying the hard, like there's a grueling part of the deployments which is long, but the actual physical task on the deployment was so much easier than what you're actually doing. I mean, let's face it, the jets that you're flying against here, there's no jets even to fly against over there. And so some say, you know, our practices are harder than our real events. And for David, what was going on is that he had practiced and he had practiced and he had practiced and he practiced. When he showed up on this day, it wasn't a big deal to him. This was just another day. This is another issue. When I'm out there, you know, every day I go out with my sheep. If a lion shows up, I handle my business. If a bear shows up, I handle my business. How is this any different? Do you notice what he was saying? He wasn't like, well, yeah, I don't know. I think I could probably do this. I've done this and this, and maybe it'll transfer over. It's kind of give me a little confidence. So, you know, give me a pep talk and I'll get out there and try to slay the dragon. No, he's just like, I did this and I did this. How's this going to be any different? This is just another day at the office. You see, when you're walking with God in the everyday, you can fight the battles that to other people seem like a giant. And people will look at you and say, how on earth are you able to go through this like this? How on earth are you able to do this? And you'll be like, I don't know, just what I do. You know, it's, you know, if every day you've made a covenant with your eyes and you're not looking where you shouldn't be looking, then when you have the opportunity to do more than just look, you won't. How did you say no? How did you not? I don't know. I just don't do that. Several times I, either myself or my spouse, has had a moment where just the job situation wasn't good. I've had to, you know, for the right decision was to quit. But of course, what keeps you from quitting a bad job? Money. And you're scared to death of what's going to happen financially. And, you know, multiple times, either I've come home or my wife's come home and said, I can't do this job anymore. And I just say, then don't. Then don't. Well, what about our finances? What do we do? God's always provided. We work hard, God always provides, okay? He'll do it. And you see, here's the thing. If you're tithing regularly and you're already trusting God with your finances, to make that decision, it's not a big decision. When you have a moment where you can give far beyond your means, people say, how on earth could you give something like that? That's just what I've been doing all along. When I went through grief counseling with, or like a group therapy thing after Melissa passed, I there was somebody in that group that like 2 years later, I saw them at a social event, just you know, randomly at a party. It's like, oh, funny seeing you here. I hadn't seen the person since. And somebody's like, how do you guys know each other? Like, well, we were in this grief counseling thing. And she's like, yeah, Steve was in the gifted program. And she's like, I was like, what? She goes, you were like flying through all that. And here's the thing. That was hard. I won't lie, it was hard. But it wasn't as hard as it was for a lot of people. Because, you know, when you're walking with God and you're trusting God, my life's motto has always been face it with faith and live for the blessing. Face it with faith and live for the blessing. Today, whatever comes, I'm going to face it with faith. Every time we've had a staff member or turnover leave, or whenever we had anything in our church happen that just, you know, was like, what are we going to do now? We haven't had a location to meet, or finances have been an issue. It's always been face it with faith. When we first started the church, we were operating at a deficit for the first 6 months. People were like, well, how long can you keep doing this? Well, for 4 more months. You know, if things like this, for you know, keep going like this, we'll close in 4 months. And you're okay with that? Yeah, we just face it with faith. We face it with faith. That's it. You know, your staff member left. What are you going to do now? We face it with faith. You know, we just trust. You know, God's been in the past. He'll be here in the future. This is God's church. He's always been a part of this, and he's always done something amazing. So I just trust him. He's going to do it. And then we live for the blessing. We hold out now, even though now things might be difficult. We live for the blessing. Because I would despair if I didn't believe I would see the goodness of the Lord once again in my lifetime. So I just live for the blessing. I hold out and just know that, God, you're going to bless us at some point. And so I'm just going to continue to live for the day when you bring the blessing. David, out there with the lion and the bear, he's living for the blessing. Someday God's going to make me king. But it's not right now. So I'm going to go back and be a shepherd. I'll take care of my sheep. And I'll have somebody watch my sheep. And I'm living for the time, God, when you fulfill the blessing that you promised to me. So when David shows up on that battle scene, I don't think it was a giant for him. I think it was just another day at the office. And whether or not you face giants in your life is going to depend on what you're doing on the days when there are no giants around. And if you're every single day walking with God, it doesn't matter what comes. It's just another day at the office. If you're not walking with God, you're going to get knocked down and run in fear when a giant of adversity comes into your life, flat out. So the question is, what are you doing right now? What are you doing right now in obscurity and monotony, walking with God every single day? Will you join with me as we pray? Father, as I think about David and Goliath, I stand here before a room full of people, many of whose stories I know, and I've watched them go through gigantic events, events that would have brought other people to their knees, events that would have incapacitated people, whether it be addictions or adulteries or health issues, death, divorce. And people look and say, how on earth did you go through that? Father, the end answer, Father, is how difficult those times are. All depends on how much we've been walking with you beforehand. So for some right now that are going through a difficult time, may they be reminded, Lord, of your faithfulness, of times when you've helped them fight a lion and a bear in the past. For others right now, that they might be encouraged to this day begin walking with you. Because Goliath's going to come. Whether it's a giant or just another day at the office depends on what we're doing right now and our relationship with you. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.